You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, September 20, 2017. It's the last weekend for Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Don Giovanni at the Indiana University Musical Arts Center. Later in the program, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Jonathan Bryan and Bruno Roberto Pimentel, who plays the title character for today's feature.
Also coming up in the next half hour, overpayment scams are increasingly popular in the South Central Indiana area. Find out what an overpayment scam is and how to spot them on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Richland Bean Blossom Community Schools continues to feel the financial effect of losing students to Seven Oaks Classical School, a charter school now in its second year. In the September 18th meeting of the Richland Bean Blossom School Board, Superintendent Mike Wilcox estimated 100 students had left RBB schools to attend Ellettsville's Seven Oaks School during the 2016-2017 school year. Wilcox says losing 100 students means a significant loss of state funding as well.
If you take that times the $5,700 that we receive for each of those students, the math comes out to $570,000.
Wilcox says RBB has gained 40 students so far this school year, but still down a total of 60 due largely to Seven Oaks.
So again, if you take that times the 5,700, that's about $342,000 out of general fund, and for a total of about $912,000 over 2 years.
Wilcox says the loss also means the school corporation didn't hire new personnel to fill 5 teaching positions left open at the end of last school year. Instead, Wilcox says he reassigned existing teachers. On April 25th, a group of public education advocates filed a lawsuit in federal court to revoke the charter of Seven Oaks in Ellettsville. The suit was filed by the local chapter of the Indiana Coalition for Public Education, which is chaired by Monroe County Community School Board member Kathy Fuentes Roer. The coalition is challenging the constitutionality of the Indiana law that allowed the new school to get a charter in the first place. Seven Oaks opened at the beginning of school last year and was granted a charter by Grace College. Grace is an evangelical Christian college and seminary in northern Indiana. In the same meeting, the Richland Bean Blossom School Corporation held a public hearing for its 2018 budget. The $28 million budget includes a $3 million allocation for so-called capital projects.
The capital projects plan, as I had gone through in the August 21st meeting, covered our technology. It also covered our outdoor facility upgrades that we will continue, and our roof on the EECC building to give 3 samples of what is in that plan.
Wilcox said $672,000 is being set aside to replace both the yellow and the white buses used by the school district.
We have a 12-year plan that is set forth to us by the DLGF, and over that 12 years, we replace an average of about 3 buses per year in that plan.
The board received no public comment on the 2018 budget. It will vote on the budget in October.
The Brown County Convention and Visitors Bureau LeafCam webcam is up and running in preparation for the turn of season. Autumn's colors bring millions of spectators from around the world to Brown County. Aubrey Sitzman, Public Relations Coordinator at the Brown County Convention Center, says the department can offer some of the best spaces to overlook the trees. The
Roughly,
Visitors
I think
Bureau.
We get around like 3 million visitors a year, and we get usually around 1 million of those in October. So that's definitely our busiest month. We get so many people who come to Brown County in the fall to look at the leaves that this is a way that people can look at them before they come or if they don't get a chance to come so that everyone can enjoy our fall foliage. That's something that we're known for.
The Visitors Bureau recommends mid-October as the peak time to view changing leaves. The leaf webcam is currently placed overlooking Bean Blossom, so that visitors can watch a time lapse of the leaves as they turn color. The camera does live feed as well.
Fall's an exciting time in Brown County, so if people get a chance to come out and, you know, be part of the excitement, see the leaves, spend some time in town or at the state park or in other places in the county, it's a great experience, and just stay tuned to the Leaf Cam and you can just experience the fall day by day with us, even if you can't come.
The Brown County Leaf Camera is available online at the Brown County website or through the Discover Brown County app.
Mother Hubbard's Cupboard in Bloomington is holding a meeting over the issues of poverty, food security, affordable health care, and affordable housing. Food insecurity and food deserts are a growing concern across the state. On August 30th, an interim study committee hearing was held by Indiana General Assembly over growing food deserts and food insecurities. Two food deserts currently exist in Bloomington, one on the northeast side and another on the southwest side of town. The north side food desert extends from Highway 45 to the railroad tracks on 11th Street. On the southwest side of Bloomington, a food desert exists from West Allen Street to West Tap Road. Sarah Cahillane is the Director of Development for Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. She says people interested in making a difference should come to the Cupboard's October 18th meeting.
Our advocacy working group is actually meeting tonight, and this is a good way for people to get involved with issues that they may think are affecting them and the community. Currently, we're going to be talking about the new health care bill that's being discussed. So it's a way for people to come in, get involved in the issues that will impact their ability to eat healthy food or access health care.
Cahillane says guest speakers will include Karen Greenstone of Hoosiers for a Common Sense Health Plan. Greenstone will be speaking about universal health care.
Monroe County commissioners got their first glimpse of a proposed site plan for an expansion of the Monroe County Convention Center in their work session this morning. John Weikert, chair of the Convention Center Advisory Board, told commissioners his board liked the plan because of its compact use of space and the fact that it did not intrude onto neighborhoods on the city of Bloomington's west side. Weikert walked commissioners through the design.
You see a proposed parking garage of 450 cars that moves from the current convention center south towards 2nd Street. You see the development of an exposition hall of approximately 40,000 square feet with support space that is south of both the courtyard by Marriott as well as the parking garage. You see the hotel development on the east side of 3rd Street, and that hotel development would include two different banquet spaces of about 500 square feet as well as support space. And then you see two connection bridges, one that connects the hotel to the current convention center that's on the lower part of the slide, which would be the north direction. And then you see a diagonal connection bridge that would connect the hotel to the exposition hall as you look to the south.
An estimate prepared by Weddle Brothers CEO Lee Carmichael puts the project cost at a little more than $72 million. Weikert told commissioners that $37 million of that is associated with the hotel and will not be paid for with tax dollars. Commissioners Patrick Stofers and Amanda Barge voiced their support for giving the advisory board approval to develop a final scope of work and a more detailed cost proposal. Commissioner Julie Thomas was more hesitant. Thomas pointed out that the county council is being asked to consider a food and beverage tax to pay for the project beyond the hotel. Thomas and County Attorney Jeff Cockrell discussed funding options.
How does the council come up with these other options for funding? And is that just all totally in the council purview? Or is that something that we need to provide some assistance with?
I would think at the end of the day, I think it's got to be a group effort. You know, when you look at the HVS study, it pointed out several different potential funding sources. The food and beverage was one of them. Innkeeper's tax is, I believe, in that report, as well as city funds, mm-hmm. such as the Creed and the TIF district mm-hmm. funds. So all those things are in the report. I guess one of the reasons to get the council is on that slide, the 72 with six zeros after it. Even if you take out the hotel, it's still $30+ million, yeah. and clearly the fiscal body needs to play a role in determining how would that gap be bridged.
Right.
Thomas said the city of Bloomington needs to be involved in funding the expansion, since it will benefit from it. The convention center expansion is on the agenda for the commissioner's regular meeting on September 27th. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Jonathan Bryan and Bruno Roberto Pimentel both study at the IU Jacobs School of Music. The two are the leads for Don Giovanni by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, whose misadventures and refusal to change eventually doom him to be dragged to hell. Considered by many opera critics to be the quintessential opera, Don Giovanni is in its last performances this weekend. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with Pimentel and Brown earlier today and brings you this report.
I'm Jonathan Bryan. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I've been living in Bloomington for 3 years now, and I'm singing the title role Don Giovanni in Don Giovanni.
I'm Bruno Sandes. I am originally from Brazil, and I've been living in Bloomington for 6 years now. I did my undergrad here, and I'm doing my second year of my master's degree, and also singing Don Giovanni.
Both of you are at Jacobs, and can you tell me a little bit about the program and also the production of Don Giovanni?
Well, being in the Jacobs School of Music is quite a privilege. We have way more resources here than the majority of schools in the country. It's considered one of the top 10 programs in the world and probably the most well-funded school of music in the world. That being said, we have a lot of room for some very opulent collegiate productions that rival a lot of professional theater, and we actually rent these sets to professional theaters. So we're kind of getting spoiled here. I've done some stuff outside of school, some smaller professional stuff that has not been near the same scope as what we do here at school. And Don Giovanni shows that off with a lot of smoke and mirrors and gargantuan sets and people rising from the dead and blood packets and a trapdoor getting dragged to hell at the end. So yeah, this show has kind of utilized a lot of the resources the school has. It's been a lot of fun.
Definitely. Besides like working with Maestro, they usually have this amazing team behind. And for me, it's just impressive how amazing it is, because sometimes when we are backstage and we just look up, you see the amount of people working behind the curtains.
All of the grips.
Oh yeah, everything. Yeah. It's amazing the amount of people they have like just to make the show happen. It's just incredible.
So tell me a little bit about Don Giovanni and about this production by Mozart. I'm sure that both of you are terribly familiar with Don Giovanni, but if you could kind of enlighten our listeners a little bit about why is Don Giovanni such a poignant piece?
I think that part of what's made it so relevant for so long is that it's really about human interaction, and it's less about Don Giovanni as a person and more about how his interactions with the people around him in his community, how it catalyzes change in everyone else's lives. And so you come and you see a lot of drama and comedy and all this stuff, but what you really see are human stories and people dealing with conflict and loss and love and jealousy and how they navigate those very human things. And so even though it was written at the end of the 18th century, it kind of shows you that no matter where you are in time, the same things are relevant.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of like the story of Don Juan is by itself very interesting and curious, because it's about this man who, no matter what he does, he always brings people around him. And it's so funny because the whole opera is put in a way that everyone is somehow connected by this guy, in a good way or in a bad way. But as Jonathan was saying, it's the whole fact that we are playing people, real people. And the interaction of Don Giovanni in the opera, when it comes to the music, it's amazing how he can play with the music to deal with people. He goes to the same level of music, the same style of music, whenever he needs to be, just to be in the same level of people, because he's from an upper class, an upper class man, and sometimes he has to deal with, most of the time in the whole opera, with people from lower class. And sometimes the only way he can reach them is playing with the same music style with them. That's how they come and sing along with Zerlina. And then he comes and Don Anna, who is from the upper class, he always match the same music style whenever he needs to. It's a very smart and very well written. That's why some people call it the perfect opera. Because we get to do a lot of operas, and most of the operas we do, there are a bunch of cuts. There are numbers that if you take out of the opera, they will not affect the whole lot. But with Don Giovanni, it's hard. That's why we don't have basically almost like not even one single cut in the whole opera. We are doing the whole show. Because if you take one part of the opera, something is going to be missing later on. So everything is so perfect. The dialogues, like the recits, the music, everything's so like interconnect, I would say. It's just amazing, the whole like from the beginning to the end, how everyone is connected to Don Giovanni, by Don Giovanni, I would say.
And going back to what you had said, you had mentioned Don Giovanni, whenever he interacts with somebody else from a lower class, mm-hmm. what does that end up sounding like? He has his own music, right? And the upper class has their own music. And then when he interacts with members of like the proletariat or the lower uh-huh. class...
When we talk about like music, and especially like with Mozart, and we comes like the minuet, let's say, it's a very, like, it comes from the French side, it's a very upper-class dance and music. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have in our first party at home. We have this gorgeous minuet happening. So it's a sign of, like, nobility. And then you have the what they call the contredanse, like, that's the lower, the countryside people dance. That comes more with Leporello, like Madamina, Il Catalogo Request that he sings. It's more dance style. So, and sometimes when he comes, like, to sing with Zerlina, with La Cindere la Mano and all this stuff, it's a love duet, but he goes to the same level. Although he could sing in minuet style, he goes to the dance style, he goes to the more... So he matches the other character's style, depending on what he needs or what he wants or where he goes. So he feels, he makes people feel the same level just for that moment to do whatever he needs to do. But at some point, he's going to come back. He's always the Don Giovanni. He's the Don. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. It's so well written. It's just in a way that at the end, like Mozart even quotes another operas. And we have like the music from the operas from the time when his opera was written.
Really?
Yeah. And one of the other characters, Leporello, calls out, "Oh, this is Cosa Rara." And he's like, "What do you think about this beautiful music?" It's so there are a lot of inside jokes from back then. It's a genius. Like, Mozart was definitely, like, an amazing composer. It's for me, like, while we were studying and researching about all that, just at the finale, there are three different operas. In a way that the character, the baritone who sang Don Giovanni, was the original Count, and the bass who sang Leporello was Figaro when they did the first performance. So when Leporello comes singing... Non piandrai, when Mozart quotes Non piandrai from Le nozze di Figaro, Leporello says, "This one I know really well." Because it was the first guy who first sang it. So there are a lot of inside jokes. So it's a very smart, like, music and opera and everything is like, there's a why behind everything. It's just amazing.
So what is the trickiest part of singing Don Giovanni, one? And then is there something else that's tricky about being Don Giovanni or in beings in such a broad production?
Well, I'd say I can't speak about being any of the other characters in the show. For Don Giovanni, I think the biggest challenge is when you look at most main characters in any sort of story, whether it's literature or, you know, theater, generally the main character is a dynamic character who undergoes some major change during the course of the story that's being told. And that's the story centers around that change and how they deal with it. And if they overcome that some sort of conflict or how something changes them fundamentally as a person. Don Giovanni is interesting because the whole thing about him is that he knows exactly who he is and nothing can change him. And in the end, he ends up paying for that with his life. He gets dragged to hell because he refuses to repent for his sins.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Jonathan Bryan and Bruno Pimentel about their performance in IU Jacobs School production of Don Giovanni by Mozart.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Not everybody hears Better Beware, so it's up to you to make sure your family and your friends don't get hit by the scams we report. For instance, right now, the swindle that seems to be hitting most victims in our area is the overpayment scam. That's when you're selling something or renting something to someone you don't know, and they send you more money than you asked for. You get a check, and sometimes it's even a cashier's check or money order, and are asked to deposit the check and then send the extra money somewhere, usually by wire transfer or maybe a prepaid money card. The check you got is a fake, but it may take 10 days or more to bounce, and the money you sent is gone forever. The best rule of thumb is don't accept an overpayment from anybody you haven't known since birth. If you or someone you know needs to buy a used car, watch out. Hurricanes and floods, like what's been happening in Texas and Florida, have given hundreds of thousands of cars a nasty bath, and most of them are going to show up on the market in coming months and years. Even before these storms hit, the number of flood cars being sold jumped by 20%, according to the Carfax website. Their spokesman, Christopher Basso, says that flooded cars can be dried out and made to look perfect in just 5 hours, and adds, quote, "Flooded cars can look great. They can run perfectly for the short term, but in the long term, and probably sooner than later, those cars are going to break down because they are literally rotting from the inside out," end quote. Used car buyers should always check car history sites like Carfax and AutoCheck and look for things like recently shampooed carpets and stains, rust, or mud hiding in places water doesn't usually get into, like the dashboard or the wiring. And then there's the Equifax data breach, which put detailed personal information for 143 million Americans into the hands of crooks. That story is getting worse by the minute. Apparently, Equifax knew about their computer problem and had the software patches for months before it happened and did nothing. They found out the data had been stolen last May or June, but didn't report it until August, after some of their high officials had sold off their stock, which, of course, immediately tanked. They're in serious trouble. But so are you if you fall for a con artist pretending to be an Equifax person who wants to verify your information, or if someone files a tax return in your name with all your personal data before you do, or uses your personal info to impersonate your bank or your broker in an email. Oh, there's more. There's lots more. So keep listening and spread the word. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.